from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today the show is going to be a really tough one. That means that if you were hoping for a show that was going to be funny, informative, or any of that stuff on this ride, I'm going to be sorry to disappoint you, because this is a huge announcement show about lots of pretty significant changes that are happening. And like all of these shows, they appeal to only a certain contingent of people. And I'm like, okay, you contingent, turn off the radio. Yeah, because that's what they're listening to it on, right? A radio. Turn it off right now. You know, like. So that's the first warning. So that's a dire warning.
Yeah, it's a good way to start the show.
Yeah. But here's the deal. For I think for some people, a small contingent, I don't actually want to guess what that percentage is. I hope it's not too low, or else, geez, we're about to waste like probably about an hour and a half of everybody's time. But for those individuals, they might be like, this was exciting. This one was a moment where something either cool or crazy was announced, depending on your tastes. But we begin first with a part that's sad enough that I would recommend that anybody operating heavy machinery or driving a car or anything else like that pull over, because some of you might, you know, get really sad right now. Because I'm sad to announce that Chris and I have broken off our engagements. So that's the big announcement news that's going to be the big bummer for everybody who's like, oh no, oh no.
They were so in love.
Oh, they seem so happy. And I'm like, we were happy. We are still happy. That's what was really fucked up about it. Like, the weird thing is, in life, you can be happy with someone and it's just still not the right. Like, there's a couple other things you just can't work through, and you just realize, you're like, damn it, formula not complete. And that's a painful realization, especially given the fact that you're trying to do it before you figure things get bad, while you're still happy. It's like, why are you leaving while you're still happy? Because leaving while you're miserable sounds like a pretty stupid idea to me.
Yeah, the number of people that I know that you know, hold on to something past the point of sanity and just keep on trying to make it work, it's usually how things go really bad.
I know, exactly. That's when people that would otherwise say, I don't understand, I'm a rational person, how did I let it get to this point? And the thing was, you didn't have the courage to break it off when you needed it to. And that's a painful realization, you know, the fact that the people that you're with sometimes, you know, that, or most of the time even, this is a fucking ticket with an expiry date on it. And you just have to realize when that expiry date starts and try to make appropriate movements. Try to make sure that everything ends up okay. Because, you know, one of my big fears was like, well, Carissa was always an integral part of the show. What the hell am I going to do now? But the truth of the matter is, because this was a mutual decision, I just think that once we get past the sad, everything's going to be all right. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm sad, but I'm not destroyed. Destroyed would have been what I would have allowed to happen had we just tried to go past the point of, this was our biggest shot. You know, this was our big, like, we gave it our all. I mean, like, I think everybody who knows me will testify saying, like, Jacob, like, he really fucking tried. It's like, if he makes this decision, trust me, 'twas not easy. So, yeah, that's the sad news, everybody. Sorry to announce that. Mommy and Daddy broke up.
And hopefully it doesn't mean this will be the last time, like, Mommy comes around to see the kids.
No. She definitely, you know, I think one of Carissa's big fears was whether or not I was just going to be, you know, a shadow like I had in the past when we had, you know, previously broken up. And I told her, I said, that I wasn't that same guy back then. You know, I had other issues that I had to deal with. The reason why I was a shadow the first time is that the things that made our relationship incompatible, I didn't want to face like a man. And this time I did. And that was hard. That's like a personality sort of stab. But you realize some really important things about yourself. And once more, you refine your understanding of who it is that you need to be with. And man, that is a quest, my friend. That is the quest. It's tough. And it may never be ending. But I guess I just have to sort of like accept that and just, you know, still be in a position where I'm happy enough that every memory I have is still a happy nostalgia. At least will become one day. That's my hope. So left still with happy memories, we're, you know, working through it. Obviously, I'm probably going to crawl in a hole somewhere for a little while and just try to recoup spending time with friends. I'm going back to see Ryan, who himself is in a cave. So I'm going to visit his cave.
Yep.
How's your cave?
Cave exchange. Oh, it's cold. It is so cold. This place is the draftiest, coldest place, and the heater does not always work.
It'll
drop down to like 63 degrees, and you'll be like, why is it so cold? And you have to go downstairs and flip the thing on and off so it actually turns on and starts heating the house. It is, it's like, I really do feel like a Canadian. I feel like this is probably how it was back in the 70s.
You know, I think I can appreciate your pain somewhat because in the building that I was in Calgary, first of all, there's like a number of floors of parking lot, freezing cold parking lot right underneath me. And I'm one of the first floors, and there's never the electrical amount, like the amount of electricity this building generates is very inadequate for the amount that's being required. So every once in a while, the heat, even while cranked to, you know, max, seems like it was what you would put if it was 15 degrees or something. And the windows are gigantic, old, non-insulated, can't close properly windows. I'm just lucky that Calgary had so many warm snaps. Otherwise, I think that I would have lost a toe or something.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Do you have a lot of new content? Have you been exploring a new world of music and things? You were always really good at exploring content when you were sort of isolated by yourself.
Oh, the problem is I'm on Rogers Internet and they have 150 gig cap. And I don't know what's going on. Like even trying really hard not to hit that thing, I hit it like earlier and earlier every month. It's becoming this it's horrible. Living under data caps is some kind of tyranny, I tell you.
It is the new tyranny, the tyranny of information. It's like, no, you can't have the same degree of access of information as other people or else we'll charge you. I'm like, excuse me?
And I swear I'm not the only person. Like, people listening to this podcast, I know there's going to be me fucking too. Netflix has this new thing called Super HD, and it rapes your bandwidth. Just rapes it. And there's no way to turn it off. Not on the Xbox, anyways.
Good God.
Yeah, so watching anything on Netflix now, they just put the new Star Trek The Next Generation episodes up there, and I'm like, oh, yeah, baby.
No, wait, not the remastered one.
I don't know if it's the remastered.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not. I've watched them. I wish it was, but they would never put that. Mm. Have you seen those, by the way?
They've only gone through like season one and two, and I refuse to watch those.
Oh yeah, no, but they should be laughed at. They're funny. So that's the announcement. Sad announcement. Now there's other news that's hopefully not as said. It's kind of like, well, what happens now? Because the thing is, as with any life with a partner, your lives become, rather intertwined. And I would say that in terms of support, at least now, Carissa had basically done most of the supporting when I had done the supporting at the beginning. It was kind of like an exchange, right? I support you, you support me. And now, when it's my turn, I'm kind of like going like, well, I'm out of here, which is probably the stupidest thing that a person can do financially, I would assume. Like, this is just dumb, especially as Chris's career begins to just really take off. Like, this is stupid financially, of course. But, you know, that means and plus now I have to move to I'm moving to Toronto to essentially spend time with my buddy Quay, who is a personal trainer, so he's going to get me back in shape in a routine as I finish the book, because obviously that's just got to get done. But in the meantime, to sort of like cushion this now, you know, pretty strong blow, means that I have to do part-time work. I've already got something lined up. So that means that the amount of shows that, while not going down to zero, are going to be severely affected. Like, I'm still going to try. Probably going to be focusing mainly on interviews where I don't have to do too much research. I can just let the guests say interesting things. But even those, that's a lot of research, as anybody who does interviews will tell you. Bad interviews are a person who says, what is your book about? That's a bad interview. But there, the thing is, amidst all of this, I realized now that, well, there are going to be two inevitable outcomes. The first is that I'm going to basically be burying myself in work. That's a common tactic, and it usually works. And time heals all wounds, so while I'm licking my wounds, I'm just going to finish what I set out to start anyways and just knock this sucker out of the park, or at least attempt to. And, you know, Toronto is a great place for me to do that because while I have people that are there, it's like being totally isolated, man. I'm going to be surrounded by like a Chinese family who barely speaks English. It's like I'm going to China, basically, little China.
Well, it is, it's, what, it's Scarborough, right?
No, it's not even Mississauga. It's a suburb outside of Toronto. But it's a really huge house, but with, you know, several Chinese families that are living there.
That just sounds like a weird situation.
It's a Chinese situation, man, but I've been living with that kind of stuff my whole life. You know, I practically have a second family that's Chinese. Still cannot say anything beyond you are a fat pig in this language. Though, you know, I can always decipher when they're saying things that are related to me. Because there's Jacob does not translate very well in Chinese, let me tell you what. But yes, so I'm going to go and isolate myself while I heal. And that's kind of like my rehabilitation plan, if you will. But in the midst of all of this plan, there is something else that's been brewing. A project that I've hinted at with a lot of different people over the past few weeks that I just tested and wasn't sure if I really wanted to do this. But when the reaction was so good, I thought, well, maybe this is actually the final answer. Maybe this is the key to the whole situation of asking, Jacob, how do you do this and it be solvent, right? Because the whole time, like even doing the podcast stuff and being full-time, just still not paying the bills, not being enough to fucking make it, still being in the goddamn rent. And you're like, how do you get to the black? And I calculated and I looked at it and I figured out a number. I wrote down this number. I'm like, 300. This is the amount of people that I need. That if they were on my hardcore membership list, for instance, everything would be fucking fine. Everything would be cozy. Everything would be so fine, in fact, that as I said before, the profits of any of the other projects that I started wouldn't necessarily have to come to me. So I thought to myself, well, why wouldn't I do this? Why wouldn't I try to create a challenge to the members that are out there right now saying like, look, I need 300 people to act as my base. Now, most of these people are already there. We have 78 hardcore members at $5. Some people give more because they're just like, this is awesome and I realize you're not at your goal yet. Some, you know, there's a few that don't give any, and these people work for what is now kind of a growing small organization, record keeping, data entry, that kind of stuff, and starting to do the things that I can't do anymore on my own. Of saying like, look, I have tons of great ideas, tons of things I want to do, but the truth is some of this stuff has to be delegated, but why wouldn't it be delegated to the 300 people that are like, we think what you do is important and we want to make it work and that it has lots of different ways that it's playing out. In fact, it's already been played out, except for I never really acknowledged that it was happening or even bothered to give it a number or try to fucking organize it. And I think that that is my problem. And I'm like, this is what I want by the time I've essentially gone into my own little Chinatown and finished the book. By the time that we're out of this, we have something that's up and running and able to, you know, really profit and work once, at least I hope, the profit from the book starts rolling in, like the real profit. So I suppose in a sense what I've wanted to do is combine all the other elements of just groups naturally forming together anyways and say, well, how can we use that creative energy that people have and do it in a way that's not really creepy? Because I've been reading a lot of things about creepy organizations and how they operate, and I'm just like, wow, I don't want to be this. In fact, I think this is one of the main reasons why I have long hesitated to do this, because you're just like, it sounds on the surface kind of like it could be one of those things, right? Like, doesn't that sound like a cult?
So this isn't the first step towards like building your own Scientology Sea Org?
Right, exactly. Is that not the first step? And then you realize, well, look, here's what generally happens. Groups of humans come together and they form their own versions of cults. Now, the thing is, the craziness of that cult has a lot to do with its structure and not with anything necessarily inherent about the instinct to want to form this cult. I'll give you a good example, right? Star Trek, the original series, gets canceled very early on. I even remember watching actually a Saturday Night Live skit about this, when everybody was talking about it, and they were like, well, the Nielsen ratings say that this is a piece of shit and that people really don't care about it and we're going to drop it. So they drop it. But what happens? Well, it turns out the people who really love it, they're like, we will not let this motherfucker die, and, you know, essentially prove that this whole system of saying we're going to measure something's popularity in terms of worth as being a stupid idea, that something could be really popular and then no one gives a shit. Britney Spears. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, there are some things that develop into the status of longevity, and there are some that don't. But I think that what helps provide some of that longevity is the fact that, see, number one thing about most of these types of groups that are not creepy is that they are fun, and they don't operate in terms of, like, you know, the commandments of any one person. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not one guy with sunglasses that tells everybody to drink some Kool-Aid.
And eventually just starts, sleeping with all of the congregation's wives.
Yes, such a common thing. I mean, I can't tell you how often that happens. You see, I've been tracking down the progress of the way that these groups form, okay? And they form in just a multitude of ways, and Star Trek is actually a good example. It's one of the things that I was studying. Here's the way that they generally form. It begins with what we call a charismatic. A charismatic is someone who can talk to you and convince you of things. They're great storytellers. They have soothing voices. They are, you know, there's a bunch of qualities that make you say, like, okay, I am more likely to believe what this person is going to say than with what X person is going to say. All right? So these types of people come along. And naturally, because they are charismatic, other people around them start to fucking gather around them. They're like, I wonder what Mr. X has to say. I wonder what's going on in his fucking old brain. And, you know, there's an element to everybody of entertainment here at the same time. Look, you go there because it's fun. You listen because you're like, hey, this was cool. The thing is about guys like Gene Roddenberry or L. Ron Hubbard is that everybody would tell you that when you were around them, you felt like $1 million. So clearly there's an element of saying, like, okay, people need to feel good, and that's why they're attracted to that. So that's an element of it, and that's not necessarily a creepy element, like I said before, though it can become creepy. Here's the thing we have to understand. The thing about cults is that imagine cults not as a thing but as a degree, and it's contingent on all of these different factors in play. For instance, let's imagine that your cult has a kind of dogma to it. It has, like, a particular thing that says Kashyyyk is a planet in the galaxy. All right? This is a dogma. You're not going to say that, you know, Kashyyyk is inhabited by a whole bunch of, I don't know what the fuck Yoda is. What the fuck is he?
I don't think they ever really say what Yoda
is. He's a shrunken down entity is what he is. An old shrunken thing. So this old shrunken thing and saying, yeah, Kashyyyk is inhabited entirely by this creature, you'd be like, that's wrong. Okay, well, that's a kind of dogma. But the deal is, if it was combined with something like, say, appeal to ultimate authority, the combination of these two things would probably make that dogma now very dangerous. Because what are the consequences of something like that? Well, there's always going to be disagreements between some of the minutiae of stuff, and disagreements in which there tends to be one, shall we say, Leviathan-like figure that has to have the threat of violence in order to be able to instill their ideology needs to be present, and then that gets all kinds of creepy violent. But you see how it's like a dial, if you want? Like, humans, they come together. They group together and they do stuff. But the problem is when they do that, there's a number of problems that occur. And some of those problems occur, for instance, in terms of how large it gets. There's no doubt in my mind that if it gets too big, it also gets really crazy. Do you know what I mean? Like, just not in terms of only power, but I mean, you're just attracting a whole bunch of nutballs that you can't fucking keep track of. And who knows what they're planning. So there's all kinds of rules. But the thing is, I've decided, well, why not challenge some of these rules and say, well, listen, the attempt is to make a group or organization that is the least cult-like entity ever by breaking all the rules of what makes cults creepy. A good example of that is I want complete transparency of the group and all this other kind of stuff. Because have you noticed that creepy cults aren't transparent? They hide everything. They have these weird secrets. They're like, oh, you need to achieve this level to know this, or we're not going to tell you the secret dogma stuff because it'll blow your mind and you won't want to know anything else about what we're teaching you. Yeah, creepy secrets. No, thank you. That's for weirdo organizations that have really malignant goals and aspirations, in my opinion.
So I'm just like, putting it out here in the clear, the good atheist actually is all about the flying spaghetti monster. That's a literal thing.
That's his noodly appendage.
Yeah, his noodly appendage is like, I've been touched by it. Like, it came through the roof and literally wrapped around me. Spaghetti sauce
that's
on my face.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, and here's the thing, too, that I think that is really important. Groups like this that form, and I hope that basically what I try can maybe be a blueprint for other people who do things like I do. Because there's lots of other individuals in the atheism scene that would be like, you're charismatic. You clearly have a group of individuals that are supportive of you. If roughly this amount of people started supporting you at this much, the same amount of fucking people that show up to church and put a tiny amount of money in the thing every time they show up every week and allow some fucking a-hole to spew nonsense, you're like, well, you're doing the same thing now, except for there ain't no churches, and all the rules are thrown out the window that make these things creepy. And more importantly, and this is probably one part where people would be like, is that right? I would say, never, ever, ever go for tax exemption. Ever. Pay your fucking taxes. Pay your dues, man. This whole tax exemption shit is bullshit. You should not cost society to do what you want to do. You should be an example. Do you remember that show I had with Leo Igwe, with that guy who was in Nigeria trying to pretty much start the Enlightenment Age in Africa? This is what he's trying to do. He's like a Thomas Jefferson of fucking Africa.
What, he's like trying to collect taxes?
No, he's not trying to collect taxes. He's trying to emancipate people. You know, from the slavery of their religion and of really poor critical thought.
Yeah, I can.
You can relate.
I think that's pretty good. I definitely think that's important.
Yeah.
Good on him. That doesn't sound like the safest of jobs.
No, it wouldn't. It is not. I think I showed one time a video of him being pretty much attacked by a number of religious people that they've been extremely critical of. People who, you know, form groups with very evil intents, like Helen Ukpabiao, or I think, I'm not quite sure if that's the pronunciation. But anyways, she's like one of those crazy Ugandan Billy Grahams, you know. And it's pretty fucked up over there. But his attitude, and I thought, this really actually changed my opinion in so many forms. It brought me down a bit of a, like, one notch, was when he was saying, we need to be an example to other groups. We can't just say, hey, religion, we can't work with you, because that's obviously not going to work either. But I thought to myself, you know what, we could do everything that they supposedly say is good and then just expose all the ways that theirs are creepy and evil by doing the very things ourselves, but also changing it in a way that says, look, we're socially responsible. We do not expect fucking taxpayers to pay our way. All we're going to do is we're going to just produce stuff, run it like a business, because you know what? Creepy dudes like L. Ron Hubbard show that you can run things like a business and it fucking works. So we're not going to be like these assholes, hide behind anything, bilk people out of all their fucking money, and just basically say, look, groups of individuals that come together for a bigger purpose, get things done, man. It doesn't have to fucking be creepy. That's the thing about it. It doesn't. Now, I've outlined a number of, like, basic rules that I just want to sort of, like, lay out there to again, reiterate the reason why it's not – why it would avoid creepiness. Now, we talked about transparency. That was the first fucking rule. And the second rule, and I think that everybody was going to say, this is such a natural fit for the good atheist, is that, look, the point is you got to laugh at yourself. You got to joke yourself. And people are going to laugh and say, like, this is a cult, and we're going to have to fucking joke about it. Because if you don't get what we're trying to do – then I think that you're sort of like, if you let it get to you, you're just only proving the fact that you think it is, when you're just like, look, I'm twisting this on its head. We're showing you that you yourself are a motherfucking cult if you accuse us of that, you idiots. It's like, that's what's so beautiful about it. It's like exposing it into somebody's face. But the whole point of it is that everybody is open to lampooning. It'd be like as if you just have a fucking roast rule. Like, no one is allowed to take themselves seriously because, and this is another rule, it's got to be fun. If this stops being fun and it turns out that I was wrong, it was creepy, it is over. We're fucking abandoning this fucking project, and I'm just going to do something else. I'm just going to be like, no, profit goes back to me for the books and products that I make, and this was just too weird. But I'm like, no, I don't think it's going to be. If we keep it fun, like, just creepy and fun, yeah, they just generally don't mix. I think that once it starts being creepy, that's when you stop having fun, and that's a pretty good indicator something bad's going on.
Oh, I can have creepy fun, sir.
Okay, well, that's true. I will not remove the possibility that there will be a contingency of people that will have creepy fun. Now, the other thing, too, I want people to understand, is I made a rough calculation of the 300, and I said 80% of the people that are part of that 300 need to be funders. That means they just need to, like, the $5 a month, that's just all I need. And I want 80% of the people that are part of that that's their role. Because I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be like, hey, I want to contribute. And I've assigned roughly 15% of the people that are interested that rather than pay the membership can instead, you know, which is still not that fucking expensive, can just help work the organization and try to find a place, being like, well, maybe you're good at, I don't know, helping to organize the list. Like, one of the goals that I need to do, because I can't do this myself, I'll be busy, is I need someone to have to set up the member site so that people can see, well, you know, how are the membership filling up and what are the numbers that are now available as some people leave and some people want to join, you know? Like, that's why we encourage, this is another value, we encourage people to leave if they just don't think that they're having any more fun, or maybe that they can change their role if they're not happy. If they're like, well, I've been funding this thing and I don't think it does anything, well, you could be like, would you like to, you know, potentially work? And but with 300 people, there'll be enough that, you know, individuals can play in between those roles and it not upset the general balance of things. See what I mean? I calculated the amount to what I call 2 Dunbars, because it sounds funny and it's really scientific. A Dunbar is the limited amount of people that you can kind of keep cognitively in your mind. It's like about 150. You know, that's kind of, that was like based on, you know, like the amount of people that used to be in our clans, you know, like monkey clans. So I figured 2 Dunbars means that you give enough of a buffer zone so that as people leave and stuff like that, you can always, you don't go outside of your comfort zone and knowing who's there. You never really reach that limit potentially. And plus, I'm pretty sure that we can push past 1 Dunbar with thanks to social networking. Do you not agree?
It's like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why that's another reason I picked 300. I feel like it's still manageable, but look, I know we can push this. But don't start thinking you can have thousands of friends and fuck manage that shit. Like, no.
So it wasn't a marketing ploy to tie it in with that popular homoerotic movie about Spartans?
Well,
what was it called again?
Well, just 300.
Oh, yeah. 300.
Well, that's not the name of the group. To be honest, that was just a number that I came up with, and I'm hopeful that the 300 will pick a fucking better name. Because, yes, like, the thing I don't like about the 300 is that it makes really negative associations with militarism, and you know how I feel about the military. So, but at the same time, the thing is that as culture has evolved, 300 has kind of become a symbol of kind of the few against the many, you know, holding the hordes at the hot gates.
Yeah, it's true.
So I thought to myself, well, at least until we have a name, I can just borrow a little bit of imagery for something. But I beg of you, any potential candidates for the 300, can someone come up with a better name? That's your first job. Like, I've learned, and we learned this actually, remember when we made the logo for Fightlinker? The best way to do it is to let it grow organically and then just jump on whatever everybody else is saying. Right? It's like you can just, you test a name out there and you see if people own it or they don't. And if they do, you're like, okay, that's how you identify yourself. But it's not a job that's yours. It's up to them to kind of like appropriate it for themselves.
So, just to be clear, this isn't about killing Persians.
No, that's we won't be killing Persians, no.
No, okay.
And we will not be seeking revenge for the fall of the Seleucid Empire, okay?
Okay.
It's not going to happen. Even though, you know, the political conditions of the time do resemble now, that is merely a coincidence that you would find fascinating if you went on Wikipedia. But other than that, the reason I just picked 300 as well is I figure that there'll always be a certain amount of people, and I've seen this myself, like some people that are like, well, you know, I'm not into the content anymore, or somebody new that's like, oh, I'm really into this, and I kind of want everyone who's in it to always be that enthusiastic. That just like romances, that you have to accept that when they're over, you yourself as a 300 will need to sort of come to accept that, even if you really love it. Maybe one day you'll be like, I should step aside and let somebody else love it because I don't love it as much as I used to. And I think that that's a pretty important growth process. And it allows you to just, like I said before, keep things manageable. I don't want this to be fucking creepy. I want it to be fun. And I know that there's so many really talented people. Like one of the projects that's going to be after Bible Stories when I switch gears is going to be a story I've been developing. And I have an artist from Spain who is going to help me do this. He's a professional comic book artist, and he's already given me, like, he's one of the 300 actually, and he's already given me a price for how much it would cost for him to do this full time. And my whole thought was when we were talking about this, and I'm like, man, the cost would be selling 5 books a day. I could get this guy to fucking do a comic book. And you know, if the book is a major success, I don't think that that's going to be that impossible. And all of a sudden, I'd be able to launch a new product that would, again, boom, you know, just be some really cool stuff. And just some of my ideas aren't even just like the story idea is a kind of, it's like, it's imagine mythology for atheism, right? No, not about gods, but about creating beautiful images that atheists can use instead of fucking relying on other religions and cultures for our own identity, goddammit. We need to create our own images. So that's part of the plans that I want to do. And they're really concrete so long as the organization is up and functioning. So I have my own motivation. I'm one of the 300. I'm number lucky 13. I picked that number. By the way, anybody who wants to join and who gets to join chooses their own number, because I don't want numbers to mean any fucking thing in particular. Choose whatever.
Just it should mean something to you.
Yeah, well, hopefully, although I tell you one thing, prime numbers are going fast. If you like math, you'll probably understand that joke.
Or you're Asian. You're just crazy about numbers.
Oh, yeah? Bill O'Reilly of the show here? Is that what this is?
What, you can't tell me Asians aren't crazy about numbers. They're number crazy, sir.
My goodness, it's a good thing we're not popular, you see? Or else we'd just get criticized, like Bill O'Reilly, for saying that Asians are typically very conservative. And you're just like, well, here's the thing about Bill O'Reilly. He's like a Rhodes Scholar.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
You don't even want to know what his SAT score was. You do not want to know. And he writes like a shitload of books. He's just really savvy and smart, and he knows how to play to his really creepy cult. He's a charismatic. But, you know, I'm saying once you understand that that's just how things function and you realize that cultishness is a thing, is a level or a degree, other things begin to make sense, and then you're just like, oh, well, the reason why people make the association of trying to separate, oh, you're a religion or is a cult, is in order for them to try to deny their own level of cultishness because they don't like that. They want legitimacy. And I'm saying that that's the whole point. Don't have legitimacy. That's why another principle is humor. Don't take yourself too fucking seriously, okay? And if you're starting to act creepy, cut it out. You're creeping everybody else out. We don't want it. We don't like it. But at least if you have the other principle, like transparency, other people can know if you're starting to do things that are kind of like, what the fuck? So it's almost like having a wiki economy, in a sense. You're allowing other people to scrutinize you because you're inviting other people to imitate you. And I think that that's the way to do it. That's the kind of Leo Igwe strategy for what I think is our kind of next phase, our new form of enlightenment. I don't know what it's called. I just think that it's happening and we don't have a word for it yet because we don't quite understand it. It's like those studies that found that people who are not religious are more generous because they're motivated by compassion and not some kind of fear of fucking hell. We have the generosity. I just don't think that even in our community, we have necessarily the right empathy for the people who are helping to make all of this possible. And really, I hope that the people who become my 300 will be folks who actually appreciate and understand this. And I only need 300 of them. The rest allows me to continue to produce content and hopefully find other people to replace the 300 as they go, come and go, depending on who it is. I know there's a few people that have said that they would rather die, especially number 42. She will never give that up. And that's the first number that everybody wants to be. Do you know why?
Why?
Because that's from Douglas Adams' sort of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's the answer to the universe.
So, see, we have our own kind of numerology. It's nerd numerology.
It's based on the mythologies or stories that are quite kind of atheistic. And I'm like, look, guys, this is a thing. You can actually make a whole culture of stuff that says that this whole idea of God is ludicrous and funny and pokes fun at the universe and shit like that. I'm like, that's our humor. We love it. Because everybody else can't face that shit, but it is hilarious. So I'm like, we just need more of those. And I think that part of the aims of at least, you know, the me wanting to have the 300 help me is that that's my goal too. I hope that people, those 300 people realize that, you know, I think it is necessary to help support people that can affect change in a scene. Even if it's just paying $5 a month. But that's actually possible when you start doing that. It's pretty fucking easy. It just turns out that when you remove the costs of having fucking buildings the way that religions did it, when you take away this whole creepy thing of like, this is secretive and there's this weird dogma, when everybody takes themselves seriously, like you can't laugh at someone who walks out with a hat that looks like fries are supposed to go in it, you might be a really fucking strong cult on the scale. And like, could you bring it down a few notches? Right? So the challenge is to make the least cultish cult in the world. This is my challenge to people. And I'm going to fund it, hopefully, not only with this group, but with the book that's going to feed right back into the organization. So it should be kind of like, that's my idea. That's the 300.
And then we kill Persians.
No, we don't go after the Persians. What's wrong with you? The Persians are nice. They make good food, but they have tacky designs now. Everything in gold. Everything gold!
Now who's the racist?
You know what's the crazy thing too is about Persians is that there's so many young people and they all secretly want into the West that they should have their own quiet revolution. You know? I just hope that one day that happens. It'd just be like the same thing that happens to Quebec because they all want it. So wanted. If you ever watch, there's a bunch of movies about that too, the weird dichotomy. Persepolis is one of them, is a really good one. Or what's it called again? Something from Tehran. I remember I wrote about it because the actress who played in it was arrested for being immodest in the movie about a girl being arrested for, I guess, irony.
Yeah, just to underline what's going on out there.
Yeah, yeah. It was the cherry. It was the necessary thing to happen to be like, this is all real. But some of this movie gets showcased in private screenings and all kinds of things that we do not fucking know, man, in some dangerous worlds where fucking kids live in pockets of the Western world. It's fucked.
Oh, man, you got to figure that all of those, like, hyper-connected next-generation people out in the Middle East, like in Iran and stuff like that, they have a stake in what's going on right now. And you got to imagine that there's a bunch that are very similar to us, that are hoping that everything just works out without their country getting bombed back to the Stone Age.
I mean, that's the whole cruel irony of humanity. So many people want peace. It's just the crazy psychos who just happen to be in power because that particular civilization is going through a kind of development phase. It was really helpful, actually, one of my last episodes with Dr. Dean Snow, like, which, I mean, even after I didn't realize how important he is as a kind of archaeologist of Native American history, but just shooting the shit for like a few days, because we were just talking even before the show. And just, you know, I was just bouncing some of my ideas off of him. And just really realizing that all of humanity right now, all of the different technological phases can be seen practically. From Stone Age people to, you know, Space Age. Which is pretty fucked up when you really think about it. But that each one has, despite the fact that there will be technological cross-sectioning, you know, like for instance, that you could still have a 14th century feudalism but with a gun rather than a sword, but that the general principles of it don't change. And then you realize it's all the same things because the strategies that human beings employ are almost universal. They're so predictable that when you actually look at it, you're just like, I'm surprised that this didn't happen sooner. I'm starting to actually feel that once we start to understand what are those underlying conditions, that we would even be able to make predictions about people that we'll be able to communicate in the future. I saw this really awesome TEDx Expo that said that this one guy that worked at SETI, he predicted that in 20 years we'll have actually made some kind of contact because of the growth of technological sophistication and our ability to chart more and more and more and better and better. And he's like, it's a matter of time before somebody else starts saying hello, even just by the sheer numbers of it, which is just staggering. But it's just sort of like, what are the consequences of that and what else will the message be? And I'm like, well, it'd be fun if we could just try to break down our own and then try to see if we could find some universals and then say, well, that's what we should be looking for. I think that's going to be our challenge in that 20 years because, I mean, who knows what kind of garbled nonsense we would get if we do get it. We better understand ourselves if we're going to understand the rest of the fucking universe. It's like all those people that are like, we're going to terraform Mars. Excuse me, I believe we haven't quite terraformed this planet yet, or we're doing it wrong.
Yeah, we seem to not be doing it quite right. We haven't mastered some of the, you know, the fine tuning on how to do it without completely killing everything.
Maybe that's kind of the whole, you know, just let me do something I called polish that turd because I've gotten quite good at this. I'll polish that turd and say that maybe somebody from the future comes over here and he talks to us and he says, tell you what, in the future, this whole environmental catastrophe that we created, by resolving it, we learned how to terraform other worlds. That was one of those lessons that we turned a fucking lemon into lemonade. We got together and we did that shit. And we terraformed our Earth first before we went elsewhere. We learned that the lessons that we needed could be learned here first, even before we went out. Like, not to discourage people going out, but I said before, man, spaceflight, you know, why don't you crawl before you can run? There's tons of lessons to be learned here. We're not done. But you know, at the same time, there will always be a part that we need to pioneer. Like, if this will probably be insulting to people, it's comparing them to ants. But if you look at the way that ant colonies are successful, there's a very tiny outlier. There's a few amount of them that just go out and they explore. They don't follow the rest of the chemical trail that everybody else does. They don't conform. And these ones go out and most of them just fucking get aced. They get squished, they get whatever. Because they're isolated, they're alone, and this is not a tried and tested path here. But the few of them that manage to come back, the Marco Polos of the fucking ant world, you know, they're the ones that allow the colony to grow and prosper. So in a sense, you know, we need to find those rare few fucking ones and foster them. That's what I think. And I mean, like, I think that we have a natural tendency to do that anyways. Now, whether or not I'm actually submitting myself to that, I'm just saying I'm doing a bunch of crazy atheist shit. Let's all hope that if through the lessons of history that all of this have consequences that we don't yet understand, but that in the future we'll think we're really important. And I'm like, I hope that I can get 300 people on board to believe me when I say that. Does it make any sense?
The changes will be, the changes that we achieve through the existence of this show will be worth it.
I think that it will mark, like, you know, this is more out of sadness, but out of resolve for me. And I hope that people understand that, look, I'm going to be sad, but I'm not hurt. And really what I would love is for everyone's support to turn to the things that I'm working on, because that's the best way to support me, really. I'm like, I'm going to throw myself all into this. When we split up, I had to try to imagine a world, a future dream without her, and that was a little bit tough. But one of the things that I did realize is, you know, I'm lucky because I had a bit of a cushion. I have a number of people that came and supported me, other individuals that are actually part of the 300. They have their own fucking numbers. And, you know, they really helped. There were people that I was able to talk to and you know, sort of like, you know, just mention saying like, I need some help because I plane tickets don't fucking grow on trees and shit like that. This was all possible because I have that. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I had 300 people, and I already have, like I said before, this is here's what's crazy. We have 78 people already, so we're plus probably another 20 individuals that are either working for the organization or are already part of it in some way. And then we have 191 people that used to be regular members that I upgraded to hardcore that I'm just going to basically invite and say, do you mind coming back at $5 a month? And if and when you feel like it's not worth it anymore, you can leave. Because by then, I hope that there's enough momentum and excitement and even sort of a bit of jealousy for not being part of the 300 that those numbers are really going to fill up easy. It's weird. It's like having a line at a restaurant. Do you know what I mean? Have a line there and you're like, this place must be good. That's how human beings work. We're just going to have to fucking work with that. We have no inherent free will. Just accept it. Now, lastly, there is something else that I wanted to experiment. I was just about to do in Calgary before, you know, the still relatively sudden decision on our part, but, you know, resolute decision, was I was going to actually start to try to organize my own get-togethers. See, I had attended a number of skeptics in the pub there, and I realized, you know, everybody was paying like maybe $20, $30 for some beer and some food. And or even more, some of them. And the group had been large enough that I thought to myself, you know what, why don't we just gather that money and I can fucking cater this shit? Because I spent, you know, Carissa ran a prop festival and I ran the cafe for two years in a row. And, you know, that thing got big like to, you know, over 100 people. So I got used to knowing how to make a budget and all this other kind of stuff. So it's actually kind of a money-making venture, though it doesn't make a lot. You know, I thought, well, at least if I'm good at it, I can break even, for instance, if I want to start get-togethers. But I know that there's a significant portion of people in Toronto that would be into it. So while I, you know, like I said before, I mean, while I will be periodically sort of, you know, a bit isolated, it won't be very different from things are now anyways. So I'm like every once in a while, maybe monthly, try to actually organize something with people there. So that there's something a little bit more physical presence, you know, like doing stuff like maybe watching, I don't know, maybe watching movies or who knows what. It will be up to the people who come to help decide what are some fun activities. Because like I said before, if the rules are for it going to be fun, like I can't come up with all the fucking fun shit. I'm hoping the people are going to help out in that avenue, right? Like you crowdsource it a little bit. Use the creative energy of people.
All I know is that if it means cheaper beer, then it sounds pretty good to me.
It's pretty much what I'm trying to do and say, yeah.
It does seem ridiculous that atheists get together and feed all their money into this bar.
What the fuck? I know exactly. This upsets me, and I'm like, no, why don't we just organize catered parties? And trust me when I say that people call me for the recipe of the shit that I make. It's like I will cater that shit like you have nobody's business, like a pro chef. It's another skill I got. So I'm like, I'm going to use all my skills, man. Every fucking skill I have, I'm going to apply in some degree. I'm like, I'm turning on all the taps. I'm like, all right, we're just going to go for it. I've been toying with these ideas for a long time, and I'm sick and tired of toying with them. And I'm like, I'm going to use my creative energy from my pain and sorrow to pretty much try to pull
make
this off.
Make delicious food.
Yeah.
Infuse that sorrow into these cakes.
Pretty much. I promise not to cry in it. Unless it adds to the flavor.
Yeah, that's the most delicious part of all. Tears of sadness.
Yeah, I'll call them sorrow cakes. You know what one of the things that I'm going to make at these events are called? It's a Quebec recipe called, the literal translation is a nun fart. So I'm going to be serving nun farts as one of the desserts. It should be quite delicious.
It's kind of a gross visual for any kind of spongy whatever that you're going to put in your mouth.
It's not spongy. It's very much like a cinnamon roll except for with caramelized brown sugar.
Ah, God, so it basically looks like a giant anus.
That's right. That's probably why they call it an unfart.
That's just vile. French people are gross.
I know, but it's their grossness that makes them sort of like more open and less prudish.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like they have no problems eating a hypothetical anus. And that's the French for you, is it not?
Yeah, that wraps them up pretty well, I think.
I think so. I think we've wrapped up the French quite nicely. I think I'd like to thank all my French fans for listening and sticking with us. I don't know if you want to be one of the 300, but shit, don't be mad. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing is on the site, there's going to be a link to it. There's going to be a link to it in this podcast, and I'm going to be mentioning it quite a few times. It's essentially you can email me, and the first part of it is really the first goal is to just get the 80% that I need to already be funders. So if you want to take part and you're like, well, I want to be the 15% that actually help work it, trust me, I'm like, I've gone through this kind of thing in a long time. Only serious people will kind of be accepted. There's a lot of labor that usually goes into this. So I'm like, don't think you're, you know, one of the 15 if you're really one of the 80. You know, we need 80% to fund. So if you're just like, yeah, $5 a month, that's going to be me. And here's the deal. It doesn't have to be the thing that you're going to do forever. Like I said before, we're going to encourage other people to sort of like, well, try to be move up. In fact, like with 5% being collaborators, are you like fucking serious enough and have like a whole bunch of crazy skills that would add to mine that we can collaborate on? That's, I love doing that. Ryan can testify.
It's true. He loves it.
So, I plan for a contingency of this as well. So, like I said, I mean, our first goal is we're at 78, and I'm going to be messaging a lot of other members and saying, like, hey, are you open? And obviously, if they're not enthusiastic about it, I'll just say, like, well, then, you know, obviously, please don't. But recognize the fact that I'm not looking for lifetime members either. So, you know, it could just be even a three-month push. But that would be a big, significant deal, and it would help cement this idea that it was really a group. And I think that once you'd be part of it, and then there's another part of the group that's building at, you know, like building a structure for it, it would kind of be fun. Now, one of the things that I'm going to put that's also part of the transparency, I'm putting everybody, my salary, so everybody can see. That's up to the 300 to decide what my salary is, you know, because why the fuck not? I'd love for you to see it. I think you should. I think it would help. And besides, I think that in a sense, like if you treat it like a business and, you know, I think that in the ideal business world, wouldn't it be cool if it was the people who ran the structure that paid like the guy who came up with the structure, they paid his salary. So if they decided that you're no longer useful, no more salary. You kind of put a fucking fire under that boss's ass, don't you think? So we're experimenting with lots of different concepts here, people. But nothing's written in stone. Did I mention that? That's probably the last thing I should have mentioned. Nothing is written in stone. Everything is up for debate. Oh, yeah, and there's one last thing, and I think that some people are going to kind of understand what I'm talking about here, is that there's really no room in all of this, even in the 300, for censorship, like at all. If someone's saying something vile or poisonous, that's up for the fucking people in the memberships to take care of that shit. I don't want bans or whatever. Even bad ideas need to be heard, because at least you know that guy had them. It's better than not knowing it as some kind of weird secret kept in his head. So, you know, I've had a long policy of this. I don't know if it's entirely possible. Maybe we'll come to a point where all of a sudden it's like, wow, that was so vile, I have no choice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to get to that point. I think it just has to basically, you know, just like I said, I try to keep it manageable to two Dunbars, because I figure that the people inside of it, you know, it will be its own entity. It doesn't, I want something that can exist outside of me. You know what I mean? Like something that's engaged in interesting projects. Because eventually, and I'm like, this is also part of how the organization grows, I would like to have, you know, accountability, board members that are voted on and things like that, and that decide where lots of the money can go, and people can make petitions for what they think projects should be, including me. Like, I'm no different. I have a fucking number. It's number 13. It's lucky 13. And because there's no hierarchy, it doesn't matter which number you are. I picked 13 just because it's like, you know, I think everybody will understand why. Do I need to mention it?
It's up to you.
Well, one of the things actually I want people to do is, if they did manage to pick their number, which I think will be a rare thing for some folks, is that, you know, I've asked people, if there's a reason, you should tell me, because I think that's kind of funny, and I want to include that as part of, like, you know, a member's own kind of wiki, in a sense. Because I don't want this to be a secretive organization. That's creepy. Though there will be a contingent, and this is the only part that I'm aware of, so there will probably be a few individuals who will probably require aliases because you can't be out of the closet for some folks. Can't be out of fucking atheist closet, and you can't do it in a way that's super open. So I understand that. That would be my only exception. Because, you know, holy shit, man. What if we had some people that came from countries where they can get killed? It's like, that can't happen. So that's the only instances I could see of the transparency rule having a fucking amendment. But again, like I said, nothing's written in stone, right? The hope is in the future everybody can be nice and open about it, and this is not going to be an issue. But wow, we don't live in that world yet, do we?
Yeah, no, we got a little bit of a ways.
We got a ways, and this is there's another kind of thing about the group. You have to be over 18, because I realize that part of the work might expose you, especially if you're like a fucking there's so many stories of teens that get kicked out of their fucking house by their religious parents, and where are they right now? There are atheist teens out there that we are fucking doing nothing about. They're on their ass because of our fucking bold statements here, because of our courage that we gave them. That was the fucking unintended consequences. And we didn't give them a safety net. Whoops. That's a bit on us. So I'm like, look, I can't add to those numbers. I'm already probably adding to those numbers enough, and I'm sick and tired of just fucking sitting on my hands. You know? My hope is maybe the 300 can find a solution for that shit. I sure would love to have a fucking solution, because I think that shit's unacceptable. If we go around calling us a fucking community and we let people slip through cracks, old people that are fucking being abused, or young people that are in fucking streets because they got kicked out because of their religion, then we don't get it. We just don't get what a fucking community is. And I'm like, we're going to have to lead by example here, and I'm really hoping that my fucking 300 are going to be those kinds of people too. That's my hope. But I think that all of this can still be fun. we can do it. Anyways, so that's the news, everybody. That's pretty much the show. So hopefully no one's like too sad about it, or on the other side of the spectrum, too creeped out or whatever. But there's going to be a few changes. Now, you guys know my level of dedication to the site and to everything, but there's also a ton of other stuff that I just won't be able to do now. That I have to sort of like help supplement my income a little bit. And that is until, of course, the 300 thing is done. And my hope is that's only going to be 6 months. I think we can do it in 6 months. And like I said before, if you looked at the numbers, we're a third of the way there. So this is not impossible. We just need to get to the other two-thirds. And I think that once people understand it in that sense, what's trying to be accomplished, they'll feel excited about it. And like I said, once they don't, just leave. Open up that space for somebody else who's going to be. All right, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.